we are going from Washington. We're going north to a place called Westminster, which is northwest of Baltimore. This is our son Chervine, and this is our daughter-in-law Natalia,
my wife,
and also our granddaughter Zofia, whom we call Zosha. And as you can see, she is about 20 months old, and she is the light of our lives.
Aaron, be very gentle.
Yeah, I was quite small. I was maybe 8 years old when he was taken hostage. And, you know, when you're a small child like that, everything that your mother tells you, you believe. So they would always tell me that everything was fine, everything was going to be okay. Dad was coming back soon. So I believed that I was very small. It was very, of course, soon we realized that it was not, you know, so everything was not going to be okay. So, and we grew up, and it was a long time. It was more than 1 year that he was away. So it was a very difficult time, of course. And but, you know, that was, it was a long time ago, but of course we always remember.
I think around Tehran there were some nice cherry gardens. I remember one specifically in Karaj many years ago that we went to. But Tehran had them. Kurdistan had them. Shiraz, I don't remember having them. I think Shiraz, the weather was not of this kind.
We will have these all year for Morabo and Olbalupolo and any other things, salads. But we have to do this today because in another few days these will all be gone. Also, as you can see, all of our Iranian friends are also here, doing the same thing, getting their sour cherries for the whole year. So when you're here. You don't feel homesick for Iran. You feel like you're back in Iran in the cherry orchard.
The cherry tree can be a very thinking about it can be a very powerful symbol of peace. After the Second World War, when so many Japanese and so many Americans had killed each other, the Japanese gave us cherry trees to plant as a symbol of peace, and I think this is always possible. To me, this symbolizes the best between countries, and between the U.S. and Iran. And I hope that, like today, you see Iranians, Americans, everyone here in peace, out enjoying themselves. That should be not unusual. It should be a normal thing for everyone. So that's my hope. Maybe that's the real reason we come here. Maybe it really isn't for the cherries. I hadn't thought about it that way, but perhaps that's the reason.
Thank you.
Bozor.
I think that what the students did protected the Islamic Revolution, at least.
All Iranian diplomatic and consular officials declared persona non grata and must leave this country by midnight tomorrow.
The planes bearing our prisoners left Iranian airspace.
See here, we're doing some. My wife is doing some of her artwork. She's the artist in the family, and you see she's doing some repairing some tiles, tile work. We had some table. The tile work is broken, and so she's doing the repair work. And she's really very good at that sort of thing. We sit out here in the summertime, in the nice weather. We can sit out here. We have a little pool that our granddaughter likes to swim in. Put a little water in it, and she likes to swim in it. When she comes over, she likes to swim. And otherwise, we can watch the birds, and we have rabbits. We have some vegetables. We have flowers out here, and it's just it's very nice. In the evening, it's very pleasant. When we sit out here, sometimes. It's as though we're remembering Shiraz and the evenings in Shiraz. We try to recreate what we remember as being pleasant, and that was always pleasant, especially in the, you know, when the weather in Shiraz the days were always hot, but in the evenings it cooled down, and we would sit outside and enjoy the weather. One of the great pleasures there clearly was sitting outside, drinking tea, eating fruit, and playing taktinak. Of course, what we miss most, obviously, are the children when they grow up, but they come around sometimes, so we see. Çay dediğimi koyayım. آبش تموم شده.
تازه درست.
آبش تموم شده بود.
تازه بریز.
نه بود.
تازه نمیخوای بریزی.
ریختم.
پیدا نکردی؟ کجاست؟
نه من میرم
پیدا
میکنم.
الان میرم
بسیار میرم. بردم بالا.
میدونم کجا گذاشتی. الان برات میرم.
Alright.
چون کلا قشنگی هستم. خوبه.
والا نمیدونم منو میشناسن نمیشناسن. You know, wherever there's nature and trees and water, I think the resemblance is where you know in Iran the green was very intense. Where there was water, then you had green and trees, and it
it was calming. Everything had a calming effect of Asrdasht in Shiraz. It was the first place we came to when we went there. I think it was 1968, 1969. We stayed there, visited there. We would go there sometimes on a Friday. One of the things that I've encountered, and it's very sad, but maybe understandable, is that today, if you ask people, what do you know about Iran? What do you think about Iran? And if I mention, for example, to my students about Iran, of course, what do they think of? Well, their images are not good. Their images are very negative. The images say they think of terrorism, they think of nuclear weapons, they think of crowds, of fanaticism. And something that I try to do, and I think a lot of us need to do, is to present another image. And that's a more balanced image. And an image of a people, and a culture of great richness, of great talent, that has given the world some of its greatest poetry, that's given the world some of its greatest art, some of its greatest greatest culture, and also people of great human feeling. So that if you look at the kinds of friendships, the kind of relations that people have, it's a culture of great warmth and great closeness. Friends that I made there 40 years ago, when I was just a young person, a young teacher, some of the friends that I had, I still communicate with them. They still send me news if I need a book or something. They'll go through a lot of trouble to send it for me. Occasionally, they'll send me just a box of gas from Isfahan or some pistachios from Iran. And this takes a lot of trouble for them to do it, but this is what a friend does.
Yeah.
And a friend does these things, and they don't think about it. This is just normal, and within you see the same closeness within a family. If a friend needs help or a family member needs help, it's expected. You put down everything. You never say, "I'm too busy. I have work to do." If it means getting on a bus and going 2 days from Mashhad to Khorramabad, that's what you do, because that's what's expected of you. And one of the features of a culture, maybe we've lost it a little bit here. We're all so busy with our own lives. We're all taking off our own lives that we forget sometimes about the human side of things. And that's something I think we can. I think that's something we can learn from people. So that's a piece that I'd like to identify. That's a piece that I think people need to know about, and I do that in my courses, in my talks, and simply say, look, there's more to this country, there's more to these people than just shouting crowds and hostility and suspicion, and let's look behind that and try to get to the reality. You know, what's important for us? Our children are important. Their education, their happiness, our children be happy, our children be educated, that they grow up well. That's the same everywhere. And we all want this for our children. We want to see our children be happy. We want our families to be stable. We want our children to be near us. We don't want to see them have to. We don't want to see our children, for example, get into drugs. We don't want to see them get into crime. We don't want to see them killed in a war. We don't want to see them killed in a war. We want to see them be useful people for the society. I think we're all very much like that. And family, again, we look at family. A lot of people think of, I know a lot of people in Iran that I've met, who didn't have a good picture of America. If you watch the movies, you'd think Americans have no morals, they have no family life, they have no religion, no principles. They only think of money, of sex, of drinking. And maybe that's true of a very small percentage. But I think most people, you would find, and if people come here, they realize, well, no, there are many things they hold in common. Maybe there are going to be differences. I think one is in the family. And the family relationships. Iran, I think people are much closer in the family. Families are larger. Families stay together. Here, I think we put a lot more value on independence. We encourage our children to be independent. Stand on their own feet, about 18, 19 years old. Very often our children live a long distance from their parents, and for us, that's normal. We move a lot, we move around a lot. If there's an opportunity somewhere, people move every couple of years. Iran in that way, I think, is much more stable. I mean, people do move, but probably less. And I think, as I said, the family consideration is much more. Tradition plays a larger part. Local tradition, family tradition. Here, it's not as strong. It's probably easier to get away from. Children, I think, very often try to break with the traditions of their family. If the family has always been in one place, very often the children will leave. The other part is that we are a very mixed country. We're a very mixed society. I think Iran has much more cultural homogeneity. It's much more unified. People share. Most of the people share a religious point of view. They share a culture and a literature. Of course, people speak many languages at home, but at the base is one culture. But I think this particular experience of the United States is very special, and what makes it special, and probably certainly different from our Iranian friends and different from a lot of our friends. I always enjoyed history from when I was a child, actually in elementary school. I always liked it, and that was one of the reasons I got interested in Iran, because of the rich history. The interesting thing is, when I got there, I found that the study of history, in the schools and universities, wasn't very encouraged, but then everybody knew about it. At the same time, it was as though history was too important for the schools, and so everyone simply lived it. So everyone knew the stories and knew the history, but nobody really studied it like a school subject. But if you look back at the history, you say, look, this place, this country, this civilization has survived for over 2,500 years, and it's survived some terrible things and some terrible events and some huge changes. And through all that time, it has kept its identity. Call it Iranian-ness. that what existed 2,500 years ago and what exists now, there is a continuity. You can see some of the same things. That the emphasis on law, the emphasis on justice, the emphasis, the importance of religion, all of these things, the importance of leadership, all those things are still there. I mean, why, what is around? Also, you see, for example, and you found the ancient historians, the Greek historians, looked at what they call the Persians, the Iranians of the day. And they said, the Iranians love to take foreign ways, things, customs from foreigners, and make them their own. And they reshape them and enrich them and bring them out in a special Iranian fashion. Well, I think the Iranians are still doing this. And this is one of the strengths of their society. Today, for example, you look at how Iran has taken to the internet and has taken to computers, and how, look at Iranian filmmaking, which is something, it's originally a foreign medium, but they have made something, the filmmakers have made something unique and something very special with a very special Iranian flavor, Iranian flavor to it. So when I look at these things, I say, with all of the changes, with all of the difficulties that have happened, something of that special identity has survived, and that I think should give us hope for the future. That whatever the appearances are. Whatever the appearances are of change, whatever the appearances are of problems, that the underneath all that, something special that makes this culture special has survived and will survive, and that the difficulties of the last 30 years are really, over the long haul, fairly small and fairly insignificant. Sahanesh, you get it. I teach a course called the U.S. in Iran. It's in the political science department. And my students are usually third and fourth year students. They're going to be naval officers, marine officers, and they come in. They're very good students, but they come in. They know very little about Iran. And what I do is to show them something about the country, and then look at the recent history of the United States, and try to look at what some of the problems are, how we look at each other, how we look at ourselves. I ask them, for example, how do Americans see themselves? How do Iranians see themselves? And then I turn that around, and I try to get them to look through the other's eyes. And it's very interesting for most of them, and it's very new, but they understand very quickly because they're young, they're smart, and they pick this up very quickly, and they pick up very quickly that what they hear on the radio and what they hear read in the media may not always be the truth, may not always be the right thing, or it may not be the full picture. Thank you. there is a custom, of course, that people can come here with free speech, and they can demonstrate in front of the White House right now. You see a couple of people with signs or some causes demonstrating at the White House. This is an honored tradition. Sometimes they demonstrate in the park. Over there, you see a demonstrator in the park. Here, you see a person in a death suit and demonstrating against the president.
9/11. We don't forget.
Yeah. Thanks, George. Laying down on the job on vacation. Oh, they could never. They'd never dream of flying aircraft into buildings.
One of the oldest traditions here is a free speech. Free speech is guaranteed under our law. And here you see in front of the White House people exercising their free speech, including this gentleman, who's dressed up as the angel of death, with his black cloak, his robe, and his side. Obviously, he's not a great fan of the president. But you come here. You come here any day of the week, and you will see someone exercising his or her right of free speech.
دانشجویی برای اینکه بشه اعتراض خودمون رو به دنیا و به خصوص به امریکایی ها بگیم انتخاب بکنیم این طرح رو طراحی کردم. روز اجرا رو انتخاب کرده بودیم روز یک شنبه 4 نوامبر 13 آبان که تظاهرات دانش آموزان و دانشجویان در 13 آبان سال پیش داشت. در مقابل دانشگاه تهران تعدادی از دانش آموزان توسط ارتش مورد هجوم قرار گرفته بودند.
۲۲ اکتبر ۷۹ وقتی شاه وارد امریکا میشه، من این اندیشه به ذهنم میرسه که ما یک اقدام دانشجویی برای اعتراض به این کار امریکا باید طراحی کنیم. شب میشینم توی خونه فکر میکنم، میشینم روی کاغذ میارم که چه کارهایی رو میتونیم انجام بدیم. چند تا سناریو رو طراحی میکنم. 1. لزوم انتقاد و اعتراض به اقدام امریکا. برای این ما احتیاج به یک اقدام، یک اکشن، یک فعالیت سیاسی داشتیم که این فعالیت سیاسی بتونه روی افکار عمومی اثر بذاره، بتونه اعتراض ما رو به گوش امریکایی‌ها و به گوش دنیا برسونه. برای اون چه کار میتونستیم بکنیم؟ نمیتونستیم تو کلاسامون که بشینیم. ما باید یک کاری میکردیم که این کار میتونست یک اقدامی باشه در رابطه با امریکا. مهمترین نماد امریکا سفارت امریکا بود. مهمترین کاری که در رابطه با سفارت امریکا بود میتونستیم بکنیم. سه تا پیشنهاد به ذهنم رسید. یکی این که یه پیشنهاد این بود که ایجاد یک حلقه انسانی دانشجویی که دانشجویان دختر و پسر به هم زنجیر کرده باشن، یک حلقه زنجیره زنجیروار دور سفارت امریکا. بگیم نمیذاریم امریکایی ها بیان بیرون، نمیذاریم هم کسی از رفت آمد کنه از بیرون بیاد، ما اعتراض داریم. تقریبا یه چیزی شبیه کاری که گاندی میکرد. این اقدام یک اقدام سمبولیک بود ولی اثر لازم رو نداشت. این موج ایجاد نمی‌کرد. شبیه این اقدام رو ما بارها تجربه کرده بودیم تو این 7-8 ماه. تمام گروه‌های تروریستی به بن‌بست خورده بودن. گروه‌های تروریستی نه، گروه‌هایی که مبارزه می‌کردن و از جنگ مسلحانه استفاده می‌کردن به پایان راهشون رسیده بودن. دو، که این میشد یک راهپیمایی اعتراض‌آمیز و میلیونی. این راهپیمایی رو بقیه نهادها داشتن انجام میدادن، یعنی ایران سراسرش پر از راهپیمایی بود، مردم هم تخصصشون راهپیمایی و تظاهرات بود. این روش رو هم تو مبارزه کسب کرده بودن، هم بعد از مبارزه برای اعلام نظرشون. سومین راه حل عبارت از این بود که ما بریم داخل سفارت و دیپلمات ها رو گروگان بگیریم. این گروگانگیری برای مدت محدودی باشه، برای 48 ساعت و به عنوان اعتراض. وقتی که ما این کار رو میکردیم هم امریکایی‌ها حساس میشدن، هم افکار عمومی دنیا. حرفامون رو بزنیم، یه تریبون دستمون گرفته بودیم، حرفامون میزدیم و بعد خلاص میمدیم بیرون. این طرح رو من نوشتم، هر کدوم از اینها رو تحلیل‌هاش هم نوشتم. یک، اگر ما با خودمون اسلحه ببریم و اگر بخوایم اقدام مسلحانه بکنیم و اگر بخوایم اقدام حرفه‌ای بکنیم، دولت جلوی ما رو میگیره، حرف منطقی هم میزنه. اما اگه بخوایم تظاهرات کنیم، دانشجویی بریم داخل و دست خالی بریم اونجا رو تصرف کنیم، دولت حرفی برای گفتن نداره، ولی امکان داره امریکایی‌ها به ما حمله کنن. زیرش نوشتم که این ایده باعث سقوط دولت موقت میتواند.
خواستید بشود؟
نه، ما قصد اون سقوط، ما فقط قصدمون یه اعتراض 48 ساعته بود.
خب بعد که این ایده رو طراحی کردی، اولین کسایی که باهاشون مطرح کردی کیا بودن؟
این شورای مرکزی 5 نفر بودن. یک، آقای میردامادی. دو، آقای بی‌طرف. سه، آقای احمدی‌نژاد.
چهار، رئیس جمهور فعلی.
که رئیس جمهور فعلیه. آقای بی‌طرف که وزیر نیرو بود. آقای میردامادی که دبیر کل حزب مشارکت هست الان. آقای سید نژاد. و پنج، خود من هستم.
خب
من این طرح رو گذاشتم اونجا. از این 5 نفر 2 نفر با اون مخالفت کردن. 2 نفر آقای احمدی‌نژاد و آقای سید نژاد مخالفت کردن. ما گفتیم خب من این طرحو دارم، آقای بی‌طرف هم میردامادی هم از من حمایت کردم، بنابراین ما گفتیم اگر می‌خوایم در چارچوب دفتر تحکیم انجام ندیم، ما جدا میشیم و 3 تا دانشگاه تهران خودشون این کارو می‌کردن. اونا پذیرفتن، تقسیم کار کردیم.
آقای احمدی نژاد و آقای
سید نژاد، اینها بعداً
خلافات کنار گیری کردن،
ولی بعداً رفتن و انقلاب فرهنگی رو تأثیر گذاشتن. از 22 اکتبر تا 2-3 نوامبر شروع کردیم به سری برنامه ریزی کردن، گشت زدن ها. بنابراین اصلا نمی‌دونستیم تو سفارت چی می‌گذره. ما با یه دیوارهای بزرگ و بلندی مواجه بودیم که همیشه می‌دیدیم یه دری باز میشه، افراد رفت آمد می‌کنن و کاملاً سکرته. این سفارت امریکا، این ساختمون‌های جلوی سفارت امریکاست. اینجا یه خیابونیه که قبلا روزولت بود اسمش، الان هست مفتح، و اینجا یه باشگاه ورزشیه به اسم امجدیه. این سفارت امریکاست. برای ما این کاملا مبهم بود، نه دسترسی به اطلاعات داشتیم. تنها کاری که میتونستیم بکنیم اینه که بیایم بریم روی این ساختمون‌های روبرو که ساختمون‌های بلندتر از این سفارت بود، بریم روی پشت بوم اینجا و از اینجا رو کنترل و نقشه برداری کنیم. مردم امروز داشتن تظاهرات میکردن، اعتراض عمومی بود علیه امریکا به دلیل سالگرد کشته شدن دانش آموزان. سراسر تهران راهپیمایی میکردن، میومدن دانشگاه تهران. خیلی طبیعی بود که 400 تا دانشجو هم توی راهپیمایی پارچه بردارن و شروع کنن به شعار دادن و بیان به سمت دانشگاه تهران. اواخر اکتبر به خاطر اینکه شاه رو امریکا راه داده بود، مردم توی تمام تظاهرات ها، شعار ها، توجهشون به امریکا جلب شده بود. شعارهاشون علیه امریکا بود. حتی اصلا بعضی موقع تظاهرات میکردن به سمت سفارت امریکا. به همین دلیل در اون زمان دولت ایران تصمیم گرفت هم به تقاضای مقامات سفارت امریکا و هم بنابر سیاست گذاری خودشون که نیروهای محافظ بیرونی سفارت رو تقویت کنند. بنابراین اینجا پر از پلیس بود.
I was in the foreign ministry that day on a professional call on Iranian professional diplomats in the foreign ministry to talk about the future diplomatic immunity status of my military liaison office. And the conversation went very well that day. We had tea. You can't have an Iranian meeting without tea. And when we finished, I went down to my limousine.
So I was actually in my office that day.
تو خیابون تخت جمشید که می اومدیم به این چهارراه که رسیدیم یه مقدار سرعتمون رو کم کردیم.
Here were the windows and we had demonstration. It was about 10:30 in the morning.
مردم عادی وقتی از اینجا رد می شدن به جلوی در سفارت که می رسیدن یه نیم نگاهی هم به سفارت می کردن یک شعار علیه امام می دادن.
We didn't think much about it, but I looked out the window.
رفتیم جلوی در جلوی نرده ها. تا اینجا نه پلیس ایران شک کرده بود نه پلیس امریکا.
These were demonstrations that were supposed to be going across خیابان طالفانی on their way to the university.
این کنار نرده ها خودمون رو چسبوندیم به نرده ها و شروع کردیم به شعار دادن.
Unfortunately one of the groups stopped right there. Imagine that's the gate. Let me show you.
مسئول عملیات این انبر دست رو میگیره و زنجیر رو شروع میکنه به پاره کردن.
Weather was just a little bit like today. There was a little bit of rain. It was cooler.
تا این میخواد پاره کنه دو سه تا از بچه‌هام از کنترل خارج میشن، از نرده‌ها میرن بالا و از بالای دیوار خودشونو اونور میندازن که تا اومدن به خودشون بجنبن این در باز شد.
Came in the direction of our building.
و نه تنها 400 دانشجو بلکه بخشی از توده‌های مردمم وارد شدن.
We were inside the building. The building is a basement and two floors in it.
ما سریع چیز کردیم که مردم خارج بشن، مردم عادی. در رو بستیم و توی اینجا من بیرون مونده بودم توی خیابون.
We're inside. We've got the door is heavy. It's shut down. People are outside. The people are outside. So what are we going to do?
دور ساختمون گشتیم. بچه‌ها گفتن اینجا پنجره‌هایی بود که به طبقه زیرزمین این ساختمون ربط پیدا می‌کرد.
Here is our basement down here, and we found people were coming in the basement.
از این پنجره نرده‌ها رو کندن.
We heard the windows breaking down here. So here was a basement. Imagine people coming in the windows over here. Over there.
که با حمله تفنگدارا اونجا مواجه شدن. تفنگدارا توی خود سفارت بودن و گاز اشکاور پرتاب میکردن.
Our marine guards were down here. But they didn't want to shoot anybody, and as far as they could say, these students were not, or the attackers were not armed. So anyway, they're in the basement.
ما هم تحلیلمون این بود که اگر تفنگ داشته باشیم امریکایی‌ها مجوز میدونن که میگن اینا به ما حمله تروریستی کردن بنابراین باید تیراندازی کنیم.
So immediately the order comes, okay, everybody, you're in the basement, let's go up to the second floor. You know, you're busy at the time and the adrenaline is going, so you don't think much about
it. اتفاقی که افتاد این بود که اونا چه تفنگداراشون چه خود کادرشون ترسیده بودن.
This person is panicked. I'm having to say to somebody, look, you stay calm. Don't worry. Some of our secretaries were crying. Some of our young Marines didn't know what to do. They're going this way and that way. So we're trying to get some control over the situation. In the meantime, all you could hear is.
امکان داشت همه سازماندهیمون با یه تیراندازی از هم بپاشه. مثلا یه تفنگدار تیراندازی بکنه.
We're not going to shoot these people. We can't get them out. So the only thing we can do, let's get some help from the people who are supposed to help us out, and that's the Iran, that's the government. So I got on the phone, and I remember I called the foreign minister's office, and I called the prime minister's office. I said, look, we've got a problem. You've got to get these people out of here. This is dangerous. Somebody's going to get hurt, and you're going to be responsible. And of course, it was. And all they could ask about were their visas. That's all they wanted to know. Well, what about those visas that we sent?
I was in my limousine, my entourage, my security detail. Started back to the embassy. My security officer immediately got telephone calls, radio calls from the embassy. Don't come back. Because students are overrunning the compound. Go back to the foreign ministry, which I did, to seek help there. Which is exactly what I did. First talking with acting foreign minister Karazi.
Trying to calm our own people down. We're trying to talk on the phone. Somebody is on the phone. Somebody is talking to Washington. It's two in the morning in Washington. Washington can't do anything for us. Somebody else is on another phone, talking to one of the ministries, talking to some friends, saying, "Look, you've got to do something." No use. Nothing. There we are, on our own. It's just us. In the meantime,
توی بلنگوی دستی اعلام می‌کردیم که ما دست خالی هستیم، هیچی نداریم. ما اومدیم اینجا 48 ساعت تحصن کنیم. می‌خوایم بشینیم رو زمین و با بلنگو نیات خودمون و برنامه‌های خودمون رو برای اونا گفت.
That was the thing we were worried about. We didn't know what was going to happen, but from all we could tell, these people were not coming in to shoot us or kill us. The weapons had not been fired.
تو همه جای دنیا دانشجوها تظاهرات میکنن، تحصن میکنن، اعتصاب غذا میکنن. این حقشونه، میرن تو سازمانها، سازمانها رو حتی اشغال میکنن. این برامون طبیعی بود.
It's clear that the Iranian government isn't going to do anything. So the result is, all we could say was, look, we are on our own. Whatever we do, we have to do.
ما میخواستیم اعتراضمون رو اونقدر شوک ایجاد بکنیم و محکم که تو دنیا صدا بکنه.
We've got to protect our people. Our people are panicking at the same time. We've got tear gas. It's the smell of tear gas, if you've ever had that.
ما نه گاز اشک‌آور داشتیم، نه امکاناتی داشتیم، که فقط پارچه‌ای داشتیم که تیز شده بود که بتونیم جلوی دماغمون رو بگیریم و اشک از چشممون نیاد.
And that's just the worst. That was getting into people's eyes and noses. So, what do you do? And I said, somebody said to me, look, you can't go out there. I said, yeah, what else am I going to do? There's nowhere else to go. We're stuck.
منتها ما بیرون از سفارت فکر میکردیم امریکایی‌ها خیلی آدم های گردن کلفتی‌ان، ما هم دانشجو بودیم، جثه های خیلی ضعیف و اینا. بعد فکر میکردیم اونا خیلی قوی‌ان، اسلحه دارن، درگیر میشن، تفنگدارای زیادی دارن.
So they said, okay, you go outside the door and take it on. So very slowly.
واقعیتش اصلا اطلاعاتمون راجع به سیستم امنیتی داخل سفارت فوق‌العاده کم بود. اصلا آشنا نبودیم. به همین دلیل هیجان داشتیم بعد از اینکه در باز شد و ما وارد میشیم چه کار کنیم؟ اصلا چه اتفاقی میفته برامون؟
Very slowly. They open the door and I get pushed out. Close the door behind me. I'm stuck out here. And now I'm stuck out with maybe 100 very excited, very angry students. They all have these sticks. There's tear gas. There's noise. They have one of our people captured. And I say to myself, what am I doing here? This is really stupid.
آره هالیوودی داره میگه. هیجان ما داشتیم ولی چماق نداشتیم. دوربین فیلم برداری داشتیم. دوربین فیلم برداری 8 میلیمتری. این فیلم تو آرشیو تلویزیون ایران هست و کاملا نشون میده که دانشجویان چوب و چماق ندارن، پلاکارد دارن و روی پلاکارد نوشته، به انگلیسی نوشته که ما هیچ وظیفه‌ای جز اعتراض و جز تحصن در این مکان نداریم. ولی اتفاق خوبی اومد که پیش اومد این بود که لیمبرت فارسی بلد بود.
50 or 60 of them, they're obviously very excited and look very angry. Of course, they tried to dress themselves up as revolutionaries. For men, I mean, they sort of looked the part. They had these sort of scruffy beards, and I don't know if they, maybe they expected to get shot or killed that day. I don't know.
تمام استراتژی این حرکت این بود که ما نشون بدیم دست خالی میریم و امریکایی‌ها به ما میزنند. حتی امریکایی‌ها شلیک میکنند و بعد تو نقشه ما این بود که اگر شلیک کردن و یکی از دانشجوها تیر خورد اونو برداریم ببریم تو دانشگاه تهران.
I actually start shaking hands with these guys. بهشون دست میدم. I said okay, start shaking hands. میگه من فلانیم. من کارمند سفارتم. شما اینجا چی میخوای؟ چیکار میکنی؟ So they come back and say, oh, این شما فارسی، شما ما میخوام یه آمریکایی حرف بزنیم. شما برو کنار. I said, well, I'm not a man for my kitchen. I'm like American. I'm not a man. 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 So the first thing they wouldn't believe I was an American. They said, no, we want to talk with an American. I said, no, I am. I said, no, we know you're a Persian speaker, blah, 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 blah. And so we go back and forth like this for a little while. And then I said, well, okay, well, listen, you've got to get out. You've got to get out of here. شما از اینجا برید بیرون دیگه. شما اینجا چه کار میکنی؟ اینجا سفارته. بعد اینا بگه به ما چی که این سفارت اینجا سفارت ما اینجا رو بگیریم. اومدیم اینجا رو بگیریم. خلاص بابا دولت ببینیم با دولت رو صحبت کنیم. ما با دولت کار نداریم. گور پدر دولته. So there, I'm saying you've got to talk to the government. You've got to talk to the government. The government is responsible. And so we don't give a hoot about the government. So that goes to the whole. But what about Shurai Inqilab? Begin the Shurai Inqilab. Filan. And we want to go to them. Good, Papa. Shurai Inqilab. But we're not carrying out anything. This is so they don't care. And this one leader, I remember, he had a very strong Isfahani accent. And he reminded me of the actor Vahdat. You remember Vahdat? He sounded just like Vahdat. I can't imitate his sound. But mom don't let him out. And he just kept going on and on in this Isfahani accent. And all I could do is this: I sound like I feel like I'm in the middle of a Vahdat movie with this guy.
Comedian.
Of course, it wasn't a comedy. It was very serious. Was very serious. So then, one of my friends is behind the door, and he starts saying, "There is a Khomeini's office has ordered these people out, and he said that there is a unit of Revolutionary Guards on the there's a unit of Revolutionary Guards on the way to throw to throw them out." So, منم تکرار کردم و ترجمه کردم گفتم که این از دفتر خمینی اعلان شد که اینا باید برن شما باید برید بیرون و یک واحد پاسداران انقلاب داره میاد به طرف سفارت که شما رو از اینجا بیرون کنه از این حرفا و خب همش دروغ بود دیگه هم it was all a lie of course but it was at least a try it was about all we could do at the time. Of course, they didn't believe us. They didn't believe me at all. But then, no, but ma in duruga in durus nisto ma mindunim in durus nisto cholase. Finally, we're sitting there. We're going back and forth. We're yelling at each other. I'm yelling at them. They're yelling at me. And finally, they just grab me. They just grab me and they put something over my eyes.
فقط مسئله امنیتی بود. فقط به خاطر مسئله امنیتی چون ما میخواستیم اونجا رو کاملا در اختیار بگیریم نمیخواستیم با یک شورش، توطئه و یا برنامه‌مون به هم بریزه.
خب وقتی چشما رو بستید کار شما شبیه گروگانگیری حرفه‌ای که تو فیلم‌های هالیوودی هزاران بار دیده بودیم و این چیزا رو وحشت فلان
قبوله قبول.
اینو
من قبول دارم. شما درست گفتی. اون اشتباه ما بود. یعنی شاید اصلا خطری ما رو تهدید نمی کرد. ما هیجان زده بودیم. شاید اصلا لزومی نداشت.
Tie my hands behind my back. Go up to the door and all I can hear them say is if you don't open this door in 5 minutes, we're going to shoot it.
یکی از بچه‌هایی که ما که مسئول عملیات بود اون رو برد اونجا و اونجا از اسلحه‌اش برای تهدید استفاده کرد.
We're going to shoot him. Put a gun to my head. And I said we're going to shoot him in 5 minutes.
اون یک اسلحه یک کلت کمری داشت ولی مجاز به استفاده از اون نبود مگر در شرایط اضطراری.
And I'm thinking, well, I hope they do open the door at this point.
وقتی در باز شد رفت دیدیم تعداد اونجا در حال عملیات هستن دارن اسناد رو خورد میکنند و اینها که وقتی که ما رسیدیم تقریبا تمام کاراشون تموم شده بود. اینجا لحظه بود که کاملا سفارت به تصرف ما در اومد.
I just was stood there for about 5 or 10 minutes and then they marched me down the steps. There was a flight of steps and out the front door into the yard. So we got out into the it was raining. It was a little cool, but it was good to be I thought two things. It was very good that I was out of the tear gas, out of the gas and the smoke, so I could breathe. And the rain felt very good on my face. I remember putting my face up to the rain like this and letting the rain get in my face. And the other thing I thought was, you know, it's very good to be alive after all that. Because I didn't know. We didn't know coming out of that, we would come out of it alive. And we thought, It was very dangerous. The last thing I'll talk about, I'll remember, and I still remember this, and this is, I still laugh when I think about this. We got out of this, and the students started to shout, Takbir. And when they would say, Allahu Akbar. And another one said, Takbir, or Allahu Akbar. Well, I was sitting there, I was alive, I was healthy, and so what did I say? Of course, Allahu Akbar, because I was very happy to hear.
Sir,
two of you?
Yes.
Not more. Okay, shut the door.
Shut up.
At the end of that first day of pleading with him, and he in contact with the Bazargan government over the telephone, each of us, constant holders of telephones that day, to communicate with our governments, I with Washington, Yazdi with the radical side of the revolution that were clearly taking over power, and it failed, and that effort failed. By the next morning, Yazdi clearly was going to be kicked out of office, Bazargan was going out, and I never got back to the embassy compound, ever. I never saw it again. I never saw my staff until 444 days later.
We expected we'd be there for a day, maybe one night. I think the first night we were there. The next morning, I said, "Well, okay, we'll be out of here." Well, it turned out we ended up living together with these with our hosts for about 14 months.
My name is Joan Walsh, W-A-L-S-H. I'm from Utah.
My name is James Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S.
My name is Lillian Johnson.
در جمیع ابعاد یک خط کاملا اسلامی و انسانیه. به خاطر ماهیتش، به خاطر موضع اسلامی که داره، مجبور ضد امپریالیست باشه. اصلا برای ما تعجب داره که امام خمینی هم رو کره زمین باشه و اینا خیالشون راحت باشه، امپریالیست ها.
واقعا درک میکنم که شاید خودم اگر 444 روز گروگان کسی باشم هیچ وقت او رو نبخشم برای تمام عمرم، به شرط اینکه البته مقصر نباشم.
3 days after the takeover of the American embassy, a group of students whom I knew and they were my friends, members of the Islamic students organizations, they approached me and they actually conveyed a message on behalf of the students who had taken the embassy, asking me to join them. And the reason behind it was that they were looking for someone who could help them in terms of a strong command of English and the interpretation process that they needed, both for the interviews and in dealing with the hostages and the documents.
از زمانی که دانشجویان حدود ساعت 10:30 این اقدام رو شروع کردند تا زمانی که ساختمان اصلی رو تونستن به دست بیارند، یک فاصله چند ساعتی، 5 ساعت حدوداً به طول انجامید. بنابراین وقتی ما با اسناد مواجه شدیم، بخشی از اسناد پودر شده بود، ولی اسنادی که رشته رشته شده بود، به خاطر اینکه این صفحات که رشته رشته میشد رو هم قرار می گرفت و بعد توی هر رشته میشد یه حرف رو پیدا کرد و بر اساس چینش حروف و بر اساس اینکه این تو کجای اون بشکه‌ای که مجموعه ای چندین کیلو اسناد پود شده یا مثلا رشته شده توش قرار گرفته بود، وقتی اینا رو کنار هم میذاشتیم میشد تشخیص داد و این اسناد رو کنار هم گذاشت.
One of the things I was most adamant about was no apology to Iran, no apology, because I said if we apologize, that means my husband was over there no good. he was up there as a, as they say, a nest of spies, but he wasn't. He was, he had gone over there to start a new relationship with the revolutionary government. That was his purpose, his mandate, but they didn't give him a chance.
If they were after recognizing the Islamic Republic of Iran, they wouldn't have admitted the Shah. But they did that. And they, the meaning, I think, behind that was that we are still supporting the monarchy. Although it could have happened. It could have been that they were working on both sides. But what made the students very concerned was that they saw these signals. And they had the experience of what had happened before. They learned from what had happened before during Dr. Mossadegh and in Chile during Dr. Allende. They felt that history might repeat itself. There was an instance during the Clinton administration when Ms. Albright, the Secretary of State at that time, she announced that
the United States played a significant role in orchestrating the overthrow of Iran's popular Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh. And it is easy to see now why many Iranians continue to resent this intervention by America in their internal affairs. Moreover, during the next quarter century, the United States and the West gave sustained backing to the Shah's regime. Although it did much to develop the country economically, the Shah's government also brutally repressed political dissent. As President Clinton has said, the United States must bear its fair share of responsibility for the problems that have arisen in U.S.-Iranian relations.
That was a step forward, but it was immediately neutralized by the Bush regime. When he came into power, he named Iran as a member of the Axis of Evil. And that was at the time that President Khatami was in power in Iran. We had a reformist government. President Khatami was advocating the concept and the policy of dialogue among civilizations.
For 28 years, we've been shouting at each other. We've been calling each other names. We've been yelling at each other. I mean, we called the Iranians part of the Axis of Evil. We called them a rogue state. We called them all kinds of, we called them the world's greatest supporter of terrorism. The Iranians call us Istikbar-e Jahani, world arrogance, Jahan Khar, the world eater, Shaitan-e Buzurg, the great Satan.
The Americans have to put aside a lot of the rhetoric that they're using. They're demonizing Iran constantly.
This situation of demonizing each other, of considering each other to be evil, to be hostile, has become sort of the usual situation. And so now, when one side, if one side, for example, decides, all right, let's try to end the situation. Let's try to change the situation. The other side pulls back because it's hostile, it's suspicious, and immediately its first reaction is there must be some trick. There must be a kalak involved in all of the in all of this. Why else would they be doing this? Because we know that the other side is an enemy, is devious. It tells lies and wants to dominate us.
America دوست نمیخواد. America خدمتگزار میخواد. America خدمتگزارانی میخواهد که منافع ملتشون رو تقدیم بکنند و در عین حال ذلت را به خودشون بار بیاورند. تحمل کنند ما ملت ما دولت ما در مقابل هر سلطه‌جویی ایستاده‌ایم و تا اون وقت که توان داریم مخالفت می‌کنیم
هر راه حل غیر عادلانه ای میتونست موجب مجدداً تحقیر شدن یه ملتی بشه اونا میگفتن ما تحقیر شدیم امریکایی‌ها نه تنها از شاه حمایت کردن بعد از اینکه شاه از ایران رفته بعد از اینکه امام اومده بعد از اینکه انقلاب شده بازم این امریکایی‌ها حاضر نیستن انقلاب ما رو به رسمیت بشناسن و حتی مثلا مداخله کردن در امور ایران. خب این حرفا رو ما هی زده بودیم و بعد رفته بودیم که داخل سفارت اسنادی رو به دست بیاریم که به مردم ثابت کنیم که امریکایی‌ها این کارا رو کردن و بعد به دست ما آورده بودیم. خب خیلی طبیعی بود که دیگه حالا این مردم نمیپذیرفتن به این راحتی عقب بشینن.
اینجا را مرکز جاسوسی و مرکز توطئه و مرکز حکومت بر ملت قرار بدهد. ما حالا بعد از اینکه جوانهای ما رفتن و شاید اونها روی این احتمالات رفته باشند که من نمیدانم که اونها روی چه احتمال رفتند و مورد تایید همه ملت ما شده است، الان ما فهمیدیم این مسئله را و ما این مرکز جاسوسی را خواهیم بست.
Two empty ones. One on Massachusetts Avenue, here, empty. It's the Iranian embassy in Tehran. An empty embassy. It's the American embassy. Except that there, it's called a museum of crimes against Iran by the United States. That's outrageous. That's a further abuse of the traditions and rules of diplomatic immunity. That they are using our embassy for a museum? We don't do that here. Why do they do that there? It should stop. As a symbol, empty that embassy and make it available someday, as here. Someday, Iran will again occupy that embassy on Massachusetts Avenue. Someday, God willing, inshallah, we will occupy that embassy on Tahrir Jamshid. I think it's got a different name now. And happily, I think most Iranians today would agree. Wouldn't he?
اونجا دیگه مسئولیت دو دولت و دو حکومت بود که بنشینن پای یه میز مذاکره‌ای و مسئله رو حل بکنن به گونه‌ای که هر دو طرف برنده باشن. خب هیچ کدوم از طرفین حاضر نبودن یه قدم عقب بشینن. این یا باید رهبری انقلاب این کار رو میکرد یا باید یک مرجع این کار رو میکرد که مسئولیت داشت در مقابل این قضیه. به یه جایی رسید که رهبر انقلاب هم مسئولیت رو به مجلس داد و میگفت نمایندگان مردم باید تصمیم بگیرن. این ماجرا هر چقدر که ازش عبور میکردیم و پیچیده‌تر میشد به ضرر ایران میشد. راه حل هایی که انتخاب میشد توسط امریکا راه حل هایی بود که دائما فشار رو روی مردم ایجاد میکرد. محاصره اقتصادی، بلوکه کردن اموال ایران و حتی تصمیم به تجاوز نظامی به ایران و اقدام برای نجات گروگان ها.
So I remember Bonnie Graves calling me and she wanted to talk to Brzezinski and I said, well, let's see if we can get in to see Lloyd Cutler because he's closer really to Carter and he's not so gung-ho for a military strike. And I called David Newsom and said the families would like to meet with either Lloyd Cutler or Brzezinski or someone because they really don't want any military thing to occur. I turned on as soon as President Carter said he failed, and then you know, eight people going with the helicopter crash, and I said, "Oh my God!" And then I called the State Department right away. I called Iran desk, and I talked to Henry Pratt, and he said, "Yes, that's happened," and what I said. I'm sorry for those eight people, and I'm glad happened there, didn't happen in Tehran, because I knew if they reached Tehran, they never could succeed.
بعد از حمله امریکا به صحرای طبس در آوریل 1980
دیگه مسئله رو کاملا به بنبست میرسونه. بعد از اینکه امریکا حمله میکنه به ایران، انتظار دارید که حالا ایران چیز کنه، به راحتی کنار بیاد؟ خب این اتفاق نیفتاد.
I think that the American diplomatic corps were victims of the actions of their government at that time and the actions of their government before that time.
For some reason these things have become an excuse or a reason to see the other side as the eternal enemy. They will always be an enemy. They will always be hostile. This history has become almost a legend or a myth in both sides, has built up into a myth far beyond the reality.
دولت با کمال وقاحت از این امر ننگین طرفداری کرد. ملت ایران را از تکهای امریکا بستر کردند.
ببین اصلا مسائل مربوط به کاپیتولاسیون تو ایران کاملا این ترجمه شد به عنوان یک کاری که امریکایی‌ها دارن حق توحش میگیرن، دارن نسبت شما یه ملت عقب افتاده ای هستید. امریکایی‌ها اگر اینجا سگ امریکایی هم مثلا ماشین شما زیرش بگیره، باید دادگاه امریکا میتونه شما رو محاکمه کنه. چیزی که اینجا تصویر میشد اینه که شاه امریکایی است. شاه و امریکا بیشتر متوجه این بودن که کمونیستا نکنه وقتی در ایران به قدرت برسن، و تصورشون این بود که حتی نیروهای مذهبی امکان داره بهترین ضد کمونیست باشن. و این فرصت طلایی رو برای یک شبکه مویرگی داخل کشور به اسم مساجد و روحانیون تغذیه میکردن، این رو یه فرصت طلایی برای این شبکه ایجاد کرد. این شبکه قدرتش از هر شبکه چریکی قوی تر بود. تفسیر جدید یا تفسیر نوعی که امام از اسلام میداد، از انقلاب میداد، تبدیل به یک ایدئولوژی انقلابی شد که این ایدئولوژی انقلابی قبل از هر چیز روی یک نوع استقلال طلبی، جدایی از، چون شعارش نه شرقی نه غربی بود، میگفت من نه طرف مسکو هستم نه طرف واشنگتن هستم، شرایط ایجاد کرد که مردم احساس معنا میکردن. این معنا بخشی و هویت بخشی برای اونها هیجان ایجاد میکرد. توی این هیجان بود که انقلاب حرکت میکرد. اشتباهات شاه به خصوص برگزاری جشن‌های 2500 ساله در اون زمان بزرگترین جشنی بود که یک دولت میتونست برگزار بکنه در دنیا. این جشن به گونه‌ای برگزار شد که هزاران نفر سرباز در لباس دورهای مختلف باستانی رژه می‌رفتن، ساعت‌ها پادشاهان زیاد، رؤسای جمهور سراسر دنیا دعوت شده بودند و پذیرایی می‌شدند.
شاه بزرگ، شاه شاهان.
اصلا این جشن 2500 ساله باعث شد که مردم یهویی به صرافت بیفتن که این هزینه از کجا اومده. بعدم به خصوص تأکیدی که شاه به صورت شوونیستی روی ناسیونالیسم باستانی میکرد، یک رنگ و بوی ضد مذهبی هم داشت دیگه، زنده کردن یک دوره باستانی در مقابل دوره اسلامی، این تحریک کرد هم علما رو هم جامعه مذهبی رو.
The waves of support that were coming from all parts of the country, people day after day coming into the streets and supporting the students and telling them to stand strongly in face of a superpower.
شما هیچ آمریکایی نمیتونی پیدا کنی که تمام سیاست کشور رو تایید کنه. آدم ممکنه با سیاست یک کشوری مخالفت داشته باشه. مثلا سیاست آمریکا در زمان شاه، سیاست آمریکا نسبت به ایران، خودم زیاد از اون سیاست خوشم نمیومد.
مدام خب دیگه این دلیلیش به یک نفر ایرانی من حمله کنم و اونو نگه دارم.
Anyway. And that meeting in Algiers was a red flag as far as the radical elements of the revolution were concerned at that time. And it was only 2 days later that the embassy was overrun because of that concern felt by the radical elements of the revolution. That meeting in Algiers was evidence that the Iranian-Americans were playing around with the Bazargan regime to restore the Shah to his throne. That was enough, aside from the treatment of the Shah in New York City, to cause them to take the action that they did to seize the embassy and use us in the way they did for the next 444 days.
In all honesty, I can't say that the treatment was very good, because it wasn't. We were prisoners. We were being held against our will. There were people around with guns. Conditions were not good.
I agree with Mr. Limbert. It was a difficult ordeal. He was a hostage of the Iranian people. We were a hostage of those circumstances. There's no question to that. But the thing is, compared to the standards that we face today, compared to Guantanamo and compared to Abu Ghraib, I think that it was a six-star hotel, what the services that we provide there.
About once a month. Once every so often. So once in a while they would remember, but there was nothing regular. Nothing regular about it. So once in a while we would go outside for some fresh air, but I must maybe three or four times. In 14 months.
لیمبرت فراموش کرده که چقدر تو این هواخوری‌ها گروگان‌ها اقدام به فرار می‌کردند و می‌خواستند خارج بشن.
The women hostages were taken regularly, at least two or three times a week, for fresh air and for exercise. But we also had security considerations, particularly after some of the hostages attempted to escape.
هر آن امکان داشت یه توجیه پیدا بشه، یه نفر بیاد بزنه یکی از این امریکایی‌ها رو بکشه. این دید تمام بازی ما رو به هم می‌ریخت.
We did our best to provide the services that we could. It was of course not a hotel. I think the quality of the food was quite good.
بی خود میگن، اینا می‌خواستن منت بذارن سر ما. مثلا خیلی به ما لطف کردن، اگه می‌خواستن به ما لطف کنن دیگه این کارو نمی‌کردن. مثلا ولمون می‌کردن.
از این گروگان ها ادعا بکنه که به ما به لحاظ تغذیه یا ورزش، هواخوری یا امکاناتی که در مقدورات اون سفارت بود چیزی رو از اونا پرهیز میکردیم، این خیلی بی‌انصافیه.
هر چقدر اینا خودشون میخوان تبرئه کنن، هر چقدر میخوان توجیه کنن، اصلا اینطوری که رفتار کردن با تمام ضوابط و قوانین دینی و عرفی و بین المللی و وطنی مغایرت داشت. این غیر قابل انکاره.
Of course, I'm sure that there were places where we had exceeded those limits, or we broke those lines, the red lines that we had. There were difficult circumstances for the students, and maybe some of the students would go too far sometimes. Can't deny that. This is a large group of students. These students were not trained for this type of work. They were a group of students, a group of intellectual students, that's all. So, that was part of history.
In the foreign ministry, food was all right. Treatment was not abusive, particularly not by the man who was chief of protocol. That was Muhammad Shukriyan, whom I remember with great affection. He was a professional diplomat. I have not seen him since. I do not know if he is alive. I hope he is alive and well. And I wish him the very best. And I expressed my appreciation for what he did for me and my two colleagues at that time. He was serving his own government. He was serving his government. He wasn't opposed to his government. He was just deeply concerned about the way in which we three as human beings were being treated.
Spencer, so we want to surprise you. Oh, that's a good news.
That's a good news? I'm going to Tehran tomorrow? Oh, good. Really? How is he? Is he well? Does he remember me? My two colleagues will be grateful, who were held with me. Mr. Grant, Mr. Mike Howland, and Victor Thompson. Those were the two who were held with me in the foreign ministry, and who will remember Shukoyan equally, lovingly, happily, to know that he's well and alive. Someday, God willing, someday, inshallah, I might see him again. I hope he is well. If not, I hope I could hear his voice at the other end of a telephone call. He could call me here in Washington. Mr. Shukoyan, Muhammad Shukoyan, I salute you. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.
Now we're going to the home of Ambassador Bruce Langen, and Bruce was the chargé d'affaires in Tehran in November of 1979, when we spent 14 months as guests of the Islamic Republic. We were at the embassy. He was one of three at the foreign ministry. At that time, Bruce Langen was doing the best he could to establish some kind of normal relationship between the U.S. and the Islamic Republic. For the last 27, 28 years, he has continually and consistently said that we need to start talking to each other and improve this relationship. So now we're going into his house.
You know, you had to keep a sense of humor. I don't know if you remember that, Parvaneh, but I in the beginning, the Iran working group at the State Department was fielding these phone calls from the families. Mm-hmm. And I noticed in Newsweek magazine that Tom Ahern, there was a picture of him in a Bullis sweater. So I asked, I called up Gisela, the wife, and I said, did Tom go to Bullis? And she said, no, he didn't. And I said, well, I think that's Bruce's sweater. Because our son did go to Bullis and he took that sweater with him.
Yeah.
And then the telephone rang and it was Mrs. Tim out in Indiana. She was the one with the youngest Marine in captivity. Mm-hmm. And she was close to hysteria. She had set up a whole altar with candles and everything and a picture of Kevin, and she would have the neighbors in to pray, and which is fine. I mean, that's the way she coped and everything. But she starts screaming at me, and she says, what are we going to do about this? My son has been in the same underwear for 3 weeks. And I said, no, Mrs. Tim, I think he's been in my husband's underwear. But she didn't laugh.
They went to residence and they took all the clothes and they divided them.
They took all his clothes. And
John was mostly about 444 days in one shirt and one pass. And he took his shirts off and he washed it. And, you know, the way he washed his clothes, my God, I don't know how he could wear it again, you know.
The day I was captured, I had a black shirt on,
yeah,
with a sweater, with, yeah, an old sweater and no tie, Yeah. I didn't wear a tie that day because I wasn't going out. Mm-hmm. So, I had this black shirt. I don't know where it is now.
It's
somewhere
in a suitcase. All
it's in the suitcase.
Stuff,
it's in,
yes,
yeah,
I have
still
it
in the, yeah, suitcase. We kept it in the suitcase. Anyway, suitcase. I wore that for the whole time. Sometimes I would wash it. I would wash it about once every week or two, and then I had a pair of pants, and they brought me the pants were getting old, so they brought me another pair of pants, and they belonged to one of my colleagues in the embassy, who was an army officer. But the trouble was, he was only about this high, so the pants sort of came down to about here on pants came only to about here on me, but they came around the waist. Anyway, that's what I was wearing, and basically those are the clothes that we came out in. So maybe because of that, actually, if you think about it now, maybe the reason I have so many clothes, or have kept so many clothes, is because having to wear the same thing day after day for 14 months, and I really got tired of that. So now I like to wear the nice clothes.
That's right. And Bruce, to this day, does his own laundry.
Yeah. Really?
That was one benefit.
Mm-hmm. That he learned.
He learned to wash
his
own
things. Yeah.
Well, I first served Nero in 1954, way back then, 25 years earlier, in the aftermath of the Mossadegh crisis. I was sent to Iran after the crisis to help cope with a bigger embassy. And I had a marvelous time. I had a great 2 years in Iran then. And that experience in Iran 25 years earlier gave me a perspective on Iran that helped me a lot when things changed 25 years later.
خاطراتی که از ایران داشتم حتی در ایران بعد از انقلاب من هر روز من تهران بودم مسافرت میکردم این ور میرفتم اون ور میرفتم هیچ نوع خصوبتی هیچ نوع ناراحتی من نداشتم.
I think that if I would answer that question, which I've been answering for many years, that what would you do if you went back to that time in history again? Would you take the same decision? I would answer that, taking the context of those times, because you can't take a part of history and bring it today and then make a decision on the basis of what we stand for today. But we have to look back in the context of history those days. I still feel that the ideas, the feelings that we had were very pure and quite justified in those times, in those contexts.
Well, there were actually Iranians demonstrating in the streets of Washington downtown, and Georgetown University students were throwing dog food at them. And I got a call from a Washington Post reporter asking me what I thought about that. And I said, well, that's not really very American, and I don't think it helps the hostages at all. And I think that she said, well, what would you do? And I said, well, I think they should do something more constructive. They could write letters to the families or to the hostages or ring bells. And then I said, tell them to tie a yellow ribbon around an oak tree. And she said, oh, that's different. Have you done that? I said, yes, I have. It was amazing how it spread from one place to the other.
من میدونستم که توی امریکا خب هم مردم هم خانواده های گروگان ها مراسم دعا شکر گذاری برای سلامتیشون و چیز اجرا میکنن و اینها، اما راجع به روبان زرد نشنیده بودم.
بروس یه کتاب نوشته به نام روبان زرد،
خیلی نماد خوبی است. من اینو نمیدونستم و راستش اگه بگی یه کمی هم خجالت کشیدم. این کار رو شاید ما هم برای فرزندانمون که تو جبهه بودن یا در خارج از کشور بودن، این حوادث برای همه کشورها رخ میده. من مسائل انسانی و مسائل مربوط به گروگان‌ها رو نمیخوام با اون سیاست‌های غلطی که مربوط به دولت‌هاست قاطی بکنم، مثل کیسینجر، برژینسکی. ببین، وقتی در مقام یک استراتژیست قرار میگیرند، انسان‌ها رو میذارن کنار، فقط دو تا باکس در نظر میگیرن، یه باکس قدرتمندی مثل باکس امریکا، یه باکس جهان سومی که باید با اون این برخورد بشه. کاری که به نظر من جان لینبرت، روزن و بروسلینگن میکنند یا خانواده هاشون میکنند، از جنس کارهایی است که یه شرایط زیست محترمانه‌تری رو برای همه ملت‌ها تو دنیا فراهم می‌کنه.
I regret that the fact that the Americans have never recognized the potentials, the capability of the Iranian nation to stand as an ally together with the Americans, to work together in equal circumstances as two equal governments, to work together for the prosperity, for the advancement of the peoples of this region, to work together in terms of the interests of both nations, the Iranian nation and the American nation.
They still don't talk to each other officially. That's ridiculous. That's stupid. For both countries, for both governments. We have too many shared interests, America and Iran, that ought to bring us together, not apart.
I think the issue is not that necessarily in the beginning that we and the Islamic Republic be friends. Maybe that's too much to ask for. But at least that we can talk to each other as responsible states talk to each other. You know, we talk to many states in this world who are not necessarily our friends, but we do talk to them. And I think that will be the first step. But demanding apologies from each other, demanding preconditions before negotiations begin, talking about changing behavior, that's I would say is a sure formula for failure.
Someday I suspect things will change in Iran, just as someday I suspect, I know things will change in the United States. We know that things change here. We're compelled to have change after the presidential period is over. And perhaps something like that will happen in Iran too. Who can say?
محمد علی پسرم دانشجوی رشته مکانیک دانشگاه صنعتی شریفه. دختر کوچیکم یک مقداری کوچکتر از پسرمه دبیرستان فرزانگان میره و یه پسر کوچکترم هست اول دبیرستان، اون هم دیگه تقریبا یه خانواده کامل هستیم. اصلا نمیخوان دنیا رو تغییر بدن، نمیخوانم کشور رو عوض کنم، به محلشون هم کاری ندارن. براشون این سوال مطرحه که اون قضیه اینقدر بزرگ بوده و تأثیر گذاشته که حتی جنگ ایران و عراق و حتی وضعیت اقتصادی بعدی، اتفاقاتی که افتاده پیامد اون ماجراست. من هرچی میخوام براشون ثابت کنم که این ربطی به اونا نداره، اون یه حادثه تاریخی است، در اون زمان یه واقعیتی بوده که رخ داده، اینا تو کتشون نمیره. این فقط مخصوص پسر من یا دختر من نیست، خیلی از دانشجو تو دانشگاه این سوالا رو از من میکنن یا اعتراض دارن نسبت به اون قضیه.
It's hard to figure out exactly why this should be so, because if you look at what has really happened in this last years.
این یه ذهن تاریخیه، یعنی دائما مردم وحشت دارن از اینکه توسط اقوام بیگانه. تو یادت اصلا بچهای ما تو کتاباشون وقتی دارن راجع به تاریخ مطالعه میکنن اصلا کاری ندارن که آیا نادرشاه رفته در هندوستان آدم کشته یا نکشته، یا ما چه بلایی سر بقیه ملت ها آوردیم. فقط ملت هایی که سر ما بلا آوردن رو میخونیم. و همین دلیل بچهای ما از وقتی که کتابای تاریخمون رو میبینن، اقوام مغول حمله کردن، تاتارا هم حمله کردن، اینجا رو به خاک و خون کشیدن، بعد سفارتخونه‌های کشورهای خارجی اومدن، مداخله کردن، یه زمانی روسیه حمله کرده، بخشایی از شمال ایران رو جدا کرده، عثمانی همیشه به ما تجاوز می‌کرده، حمله می‌کرده، بعد برای مسائل سیاسیمون سفارت انگلیس و روسیه تصمیم گرفتن، بعد از اینم که دولت مصدق سقوط کرده، دولتی که مردم دوستش داشتن توسط آمریکا سقوط کرده.
Iran is no threat to the world. Iran is a peaceful country. Iran has not attacked any country in the world for the past, I think, 700 years. We've been attacked a lot, but we haven't attacked any country. And there's no intention to attack any country. The only intention is to protect Iran. Iran has been attacked by Saddam regime in the past years. Iran is currently surrounded by countries which have very volatile situations. Afghanistan and Iraq have already been invaded by the American and the coalition. So these are very difficult circumstances for Iran, and I think that the Americans have to understand that. But in light of that, they also have to understand the messages, the positive messages that are coming from the Iranian president, the Iranian society, the different political groups in Iran, that they are not after war. They are after peaceful resolution of the conflicts. They are after protecting Iran in the form of dialogue, negotiation, and working together to find a solution.
In many ways, we are natural allies because of our shared interests in the Persian Gulf region. And you notice I said Persian Gulf, not Arabian Gulf. That's important for all Persians, I think. Even though I've got a son now who is traveling in the Persian Gulf on board an aircraft carrier, USS Nimitz. And there on that carrier, they speak of the Arabian Gulf. Out of line with history. It's the Persian Gulf. Of course it is.
To them, we were strange people. We were strange people. I think they imagined that we were, I don't know, that we had horns, that we were devils in some way, that we were non-human, non-human. And then when they found us there, and we found we were forced to live together for 14 months, they found that, in fact, that wasn't the case, and that we had families, we had ideas, we had opinions, we had, some of us had children, and that we cared a lot about the same things that they did,
آقای جان لیمبرت و آقای بروس لینگن در مورد تعرض و در مورد اذیت و آزاری که شما شدید در اون ایام، من هم یک حس مشترکی با شما دارم. ما هم در حقیقت گروگان شما بودیم در اون ایام. این رو نمیخوام حالا به صورت طنز بگم، اما در مورد مسئله مهمان نوازی و اینکه این، من هم قبول دارم ایرانیان نه ملت گروگانگیری بودند و نه جزء عادات و رسومشون هست، اما در مورد این اقدام که آیا این اقدام دانشجویان یک حرکت ایرانی بوده یا نبوده، این حرکت ضرورت زمان و ضرورت وضعیت انقلاب بوده و ما مطابق با اون وضعیت سعی کردیم تمام تلاشمون رو بکنیم که به شما آسیبی نرسه، حفظتون بکنیم و همونطور هم که بارها گفتم و خودتون هم اعتراف دارید، اقدام ما یک اقدام کوتاه مدت، غیر حرفه‌ای، دانشجویی و اعتراض آمیز بوده.
That was an unfortunate experience, but I came to know Iran in a different way. That hasn't changed my fundamental appreciation of Iran. I have enormous respect for Iran's traditions, its history, its culture, its people. I haven't forgotten that. Someday I'd like to see it again. But it is not the time for me to go back now.
من قبل از سفارت، قبل از اینکه اون طرح و ایده رو بدم، عاشق خانومم بودم. یعنی اونو دیده بودم.
عاشق شده
بودم.
قبل از اینکه طراحی گروگانگیری بکنی عاشق اون بودی؟
آره، دانشجوی سال اولی بود.
خب بعد تو چطور عاشق یه دختری بودی بعد خودتو به خطر انداختی؟
بین عشق یا مثلا یک عملیاتی که اون عملیات آرمانی باشه، گاهی اوقات لازم نیست حتما تضاد دو چیز باشه. یعنی تو مثلا حتما اگر عاشقش هستی تمام زندگیتو بذاری، برنامه‌هاتو بگذاری برای که به اون عشقت برسی. اون از جمله دخترهایی بود که توجه منو به خودش جلب کرده بود با ورودش به دانشگاه. بعد از حمله امریکا به طبس توی اردیبهشت ماه دیگه موقعی بود که من حتی سفارت رو ترک کرده بودم و در فکر تشکیل زندگی بودم. اصلا ازدواج من و همسرم در اردیبهشت ماه قبل از عملیات نظامی امریکا بود. دلم میخواست زندگی مشترک تشکیل بدیم. این زندگی مشترک رو نمیخواستم که دیگه خیلی صرف لاله بکنم. مضاف بر اینکه مسائل سفارت امریکا دیگه از اعتبار افتاده بود، تصمیم گیری ها بیرون از سفارت امریکا صورت میگرفت و دانشجویان خیلی نقشی در تصمیم گیری ها نداشتن. خسته شده بودم. کلمه برداشت مساوی با اینه که یه چیزی رو برداری. من به شوخی میگم برداشت من از سفارت امریکا اینه که با خانومم ازدواج کردم. این خانومم من از بر...
سفارت امریکا برداشتم.
I'd lived in the States for about 6 years in one of the suburbs of Philadelphia. My father was a PhD student at that time. And he was studying in the University of Pennsylvania. I went to school there. I went to both kindergarten and elementary school in the States. And I had friends. I had American friends. I enjoyed very much the times that I had there. And my impression of the American people was very different from what I later saw the actions of the American government. And I felt this contradiction between what the American people stood for, what the American society stood for, the values that they promoted. And I learned as a child in elementary schools there, it's a contradiction between what their government was practicing here in Iran and what they were teaching and professing to be standing for in the States. I could feel this, that there is somehow a gap between what's happening there and what's happening here and what their government is doing in the name of the American people to another country like Iran. And I think that this gave me more strength to stand up and to speak out on behalf of the Iranian people.
دو تا با هم ازدواج کردیم اومدم توی یه خانواده اومدم توی یه خانواده ایرانی با جزء اون خانواده شد. شاید مثلا آمریکایی باشم یا یه مرد آمریکایی باشم که توی خانواده ایرانی بالاخره منو قبول کردن به فرزندی. فارسی همینطور که گفتم البته صحبت کردن و شنیدن و یاد گرفتنش خیلی لذت داره. از اولم نمیدونم چی بوده اینقدر علاقه من شدم به زبانت. یادم نمیره روز اولی که سر کلاس فارسی رفتم معلمای ایرانی با هم صحبت میکردم گفتم به به چی زبان قشنگی اینو باید یاد بگیرم.
من امریکا نرفتم، با فرهنگ امریکاییام تا قبل از سفارت آشنا نبودم، ولی راجبش خیلی کتاب خونده بودم یا بعدن خوندم راجب تحول. بالاخره یه جامعه جدیده، بنیانهای خیلی سنتی نداره، ولی دوستم دارم برم، اما فکر کنم الان نمیذارن من برم امریکا، یه ممنوعیتی باید وجود داشته باشه. ولی راجبش این فکر میکنم که من باید تو لیست سیاه باشم به نظر میرسه.
بری تو امریکا میگیرنت؟
نمیدونم، ولی اجازه نمیدن به این که برم توی امریکا. البته تا حالا تقاضا ندادم واقعا بفهمم هست یا نیست، این حدس منه، ولی یک بار توی روزنامه عربی خوندم که امریکایی‌ها گفته بودن که مثلا یه تعداد افرادی که منافع ما رو به خطر انداختن نمیتونن وارد امریکا بشن، و این البته حق به اونهاست، هر کشوری میتونه ویزا بده یا نده. خب حرف بزن، بگو. ببین من با تو یه چیز عملی انجام میدم، تو حاضری؟ بیا یه واسه رو به دیوار. ببین محمد، اگر علیه منافع کشور کاری کرده باشی حق دارم تو رو به دیوار نگه دارم، بر اساس قانون حق دارم چشماتو ببندم، حق دارم دستاتو ببندم، تو رو به مراجع قضایی تحویل بدم. اقدامی که دانشجویان کردن در گروگانگیری، بستن چشم امریکایی ها و بستن دستشون، ولو اینکه یک اقدامی به ظاهر خلاف عرف و خلاف دیپلماتیک بود، اما یک اقدامی بود برای دفاع از خودشون. تو باید بدونی وقتی که اون گروگان منه، من هم گروگان اون بودم، ما لزومی نداشت این همه طول بکشه از زندگی بیفتیم. من در این که الان این سوء تفاهم ها رو برطرف کنیم هیچ شکی ندارم، دلم میخواد این کار رو صورت بدم، هر کاری هم حاضرم انجام بدم که این سوء تفاهم از بین بره.
4 ساعت و 4 دقیقه و 4 ثانیه گروگان من باش و نذارم از این در بره بیرون.
فوق العاده برام سخته، من یک دقیقش هم تحمل نمی کنم. این قف کردن تو هیچ توجیه جز یه فیلم سازی نداره.
یه اعتمادی تو کردی؟
بله.
من دارم یه اعتماد رو میشکنم.
کار بدی میکنی؟ بله کار بدی میکنی. این تو این کانسپته، تو این متنه.
توی رابطه من و تو، اعتمادی که من به تو کردم و با هم داریم یه صحبتی
رو، من دستتو میبندم.
بله میگی نمیذارم بری.
گوش بده. نه دستتو میبندم نه چشماتو میبندم. چرا که تو مجرم نیستی؟ چرا که من از تو عصبانی نیستم؟ چرا که
ولی نمیذاری من از خونت خارج بشم؟
آره فقط همین.
همین این از نظر من
چیز در قفل
نمیتونم برم بیرون. این یه چیز بدیه.
تمام انسان‌ها حقوق مساوی دارن. این شعار نیست.
حرف نزن ابراهیم. راجب جامعه و کشور حرف نزن. الان رابطه دو نفره من و توئه.
وقتی تو یکی رو دعوت می‌کنی به خونت، نمیتونی در ببندی. من اگر اومدم
گوش بده.
یه خانگی مهمون، اگر من سرک می‌کشیدم تو اتاق تو، اگه می‌رفتم داخل کمداتو می‌گشتم، اگه سعی می‌کردم خونت رو کنترل بکنم، تو حق داشتی در قفل کنی. ببین
تو چی ندارم. تو چرا موقع بعد از اینکه آزاد شدی از اینجا
چیه؟
تو موقع میگم
حالا من می‌خوام برم، تو هم درو باید باز کنی.
حالا فقط موبایلو می‌تونی روشن کنی همین. ببین چقدر امکانات رفاهی در اختیار گذاشتم. گیر یه جوان ناپخته که دانشجو دوران دانشجویش هم تموم شده ولی هنوز ناپخته، گیر همچین آدمی افتادم.
درست. این از تو این چی میخوای در بیاری؟ در تمام دنیا
گروگانگیر به گروگان توضیح باید بده.
اه؟
Patience is a bitter cup that only the strong can drink. And that's the kind of bitter cup that both your government and mine are facing, and only the strength of both of us can cope with that kind of situation.